The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Are you looking for more customers for your business? Are you facing new competitors, not just across town, but across the country? How about across borders? How about worldwide? Welcome to Global Reach with your host, Tay Revez. As new technology makes it easier to connect with your customers, it also makes it easier for international competitors to reach them. Our program will help you stay competitive in a tough marketplace. Now, here's your host, Tay Revez.
Welcome back to Global Reach, everyone. This is the show that helps your international business deal with the opportunities, risks, and strategies in the global marketplace. And we look at the issues that can change the shape of that marketplace. This week is all about innovation. And my two guests, John King and Tamer Zaman, are drivers behind a really unique organization, 1 Million Acts of Innovation. Welcome to Global Reach, John. And welcome back, Tamer. Briefly, John, what exactly is 1 Million Acts of Innovation?
What it is it's a community of people who have a vital interest in building a rich and growing conversation about innovation in their homes and their families and their schools and in their communities. And our test bed is in Canada, but it's a global conversation.
We're doing this show because Tamer is working on this really interesting paradigm. Tamer, what is it you said to me when we were setting up for the show?
I mentioned that I think this is a conversation that a time has come. It came to me through a mutual friend of John and I. And it's about human beings, moment by moment, are either creating or consuming. And when we are creating, we come alive. And creation means something, and personally to each person, it means something very different. To each company means something different. Organization means something very different. And it's all about when you're busy creating versus consuming, it's when you come alive.
And we'll get into details about what that means to companies, whether they're telecom or payments or pharma or consumer goods. Just in a few minutes, before we talk about this coming alive, this week the United States, we had two horrific events, the Boston Marathon bombing on Monday and the fertilizer plant explosion last night in West Texas. And on behalf of myself, my producer, Tracy Trump, and the Voice America family, I would like to express our profound sadness over the injuries and losses of life, and to offer our prayers for healing of the wounded, their families here and around the world, and the communities. Now, before we get into our subject, I want to talk a bit more about our guests. Then we'll plunge into innovation ideas and making businesses more alive. And a very interesting other paradigm that Tamer is looking at called duh, uh-huh, and wow. And I'm dying to find out what that means to international business. First, our return guests. Tamer Zaman. He's Chief Viral Officer of the Access Group in Canada, co-author of Thinking Outside the Bowl, Accelerating Your Business Genius, and is the co-founder of 1 Million Acts of Innovation. Tamer is a leader who understands how to create and build innovation movements across multiple geographies, industries, and companies. And since I first interviewed him nearly a year ago, he's also become a friend. And I can tell you he is passionate for innovation, leadership, and empowerment. He works with leaders to cause step changes in performance for teams, firms across the world, and has developed insights because of this into key international markets. He's also had senior positions at BCE, Dell Computer, NEC, and he's been a keynote speaker at executive conferences across the country and I think in other countries as well. So again, welcome back, Tamor.
Now let me turn
to John. So now let me turn to John King. First off, he is a rogue scholar. And for that reason, he became chair of 1 Million Acts of Innovation. We'll find out exactly what that means. He's also the founding partner and CEO of a very intriguing company called Cultural Architecture, which is a consulting firm that focuses on leadership strategy, cultural change, and executive coaching. He's the co-author of two books, Tribal Leadership and The Coaching Revolution. He's on the faculty of the Middle East Leadership Academy and the Central Eurasian Leadership Academy. He's a strategist for the Bonobo Conservation Initiative, which also sounds fascinating. And I can't think why, but somehow it would seem that all this has made him a keynote speaker and nationally recognized senior teacher, coach, and program leader for companies such as his clients, which include C.B. Richard Ellis, Extraordinary Golf, the Space Frontier Foundation, Zappos, Arup. He's also, his clients, who he's coached, have been featured on all major TV networks and in the Wall Street Journal. He's also a frequent guest lecturer at the Marshall School of Business, the Price School of Public Policy, both at USC, and at the Eller College at the University of Arizona. John was the 2012 University of Oklahoma Visiting Scholar on Leadership, and he also very intriguingly consults with the Bank of Georgia in the Republic of Georgia. And we're going to talk about some of the results that have come out of that a little bit later in the show. But let's start out with your thesis. Tamor, humans are moment by moment either creating or consuming. Define really what that means for business. You talked a little bit about the creating side, but what do you really mean by this?
So I'm going to start with a personal story, if I may, something that I think most people could relate to, and then bring it out to the business to business context, if I may.
Please do.
I'm dating somebody who's now my wife, Anitra Prasad, and we've been dating for 4.5 years. And when I got onto my knee to propose to her, the minute she said yes, our entire future changed. Like, we now had a brand new future. And then a few months after we got married, we put together, we purchased a condo together. And the minute the seller of the condo agreed to the contract, all of a sudden, another brand new future got created. Like, we could just see a house that we could live, raise a family in, like that. So you could see, like, in the world of, you know, human beings, moment by moment, are either creating or consuming. I mean, you bring creation, innovation to whatever that you are committed to. In this case, you know, going from being engaged or going from dating to being engaged to being married to purchase a condo. Each stage, it just, like, if you saw Anitra in that moment, if you saw me in that moment when we got engaged or we got married or, you know, we got our first house, it was like a sense of us being alive.
So how do...
Right?
Okay,
and,
how do we translate...
So one of the things that I think even John King will allude to later on today is we all as human beings have the capability to bring innovation and creation to the things that we're interested in. Now, bring you back to the context of a business, I'll give you two different examples. One of my previous employers is currently dealing with this exact issue. It's a company called Dell Computers. And you could arguably say the only innovation Dell brought to the marketplace was introducing the direct model. So
something
buying purchasing a laptop from a retail store, go direct. Ever since that, I'm not sure if Dell brought any real innovation into the business. And so their stock price, which was once at, I think, about $155, today doesn't even reach $15. On the other side of the equation, you have a company called Apple. Apple introduces a computer. They then go to the next stage and they introduce you know, other stuff like iPhones, iPads, iTunes, like that. And so you could see how one is consistently creating, versus another one, you know, the pitfall is that we get busy with consuming.
Okay. So, in the cross-border business sense, can you give us some examples? How does it apply to a company that wants to do business in 20 or 30 different countries?
I can give you tons of examples, but our chairman, John King, has really some great examples of how he's driving a media access innovation.
Well, John, first
countries.
I want to ask you, do you actually buy into this?
Do I buy into the notion that moment by moment we're either creating or consuming?
And that applies to businesses?
And that applies to businesses, yes, I do. And I don't buy into it, there's a funny way that I buy into it, Tay. I don't buy into it like it's the truth, like it's scientifically provable. I buy into it like it's a very powerful interpretation and place to think from.
Okay.
So I'm not interested actually in standing here and proving it to you that when you're consuming you're brain dead, and when you're creating you're alive and all of that. That's just not a very interesting conversation. But what I do notice is that when people are being innovative, even inside of the process of consumption, which our cultures and our societies and our economies are based on, there are places where it goes flat, and there's places where it comes alive.
But give me an example, John, from some of the companies that you've worked with.
Okay. Let's take a look at Zappos. Very, very interesting and innovative company that they were. The guy that that formed the company, a guy named Tony Hsieh, and his partner, Alfred Lin, had really done very, very well for themselves. Tony Hsieh is a geek, and he's a complete genius with coding and stuff like that. And so he had sold a software package for $268 million when he was 26 years old, and he's kind of done. And he began to look around for things that cannot be done in the marketplace. He's an entrepreneur, so he was looking around for things that cannot be done. And it was suggested to him that of all the things that one cannot do, one cannot sell shoes by mail. And so it was like, really? This is a challenge Tony Hsieh just kind of came alive at looking at. And in the course of his travels, he met a guy named Fred who was with Nordstrom's. And Nordstrom's is essentially basically a shoe company. And Fred knew shoes. And Fred had the idea that they could do it with Tony Hsieh's genius and Alfred Lin, who is the financial officer, and his being able to put it together. So they actually went out and they started kind of putting it together. We will sell you shoes. And they put together a program where they gave you so much more value than you thought you were going to get. You order a pair of shoes, they don't fit you. That's going to be the problem. Well, hey, send them back, we'll pay the postage. And then pick another shoe, and we'll send you. And we'll go back and forth with you until you find the shoes you want. And we will pay the postage. We will promise you that we'll sell you the shoes. We'll get you the shoes within 5 days, but they will show up on your door tomorrow.
Wow.
And when you call into their teleconference, into their telemarketing room to the call center, I want to say, they're not selling you shoes. They're talking with you about shoes. So when you go to Zappos is the world champion place to go and talk about shoes. People are interested in shoes. And you could go and you can in there and talk and not buy anything and just have somebody to chat with. Now, eventually they're going to sell you something.
That is really a completely different business paradigm. Listen, we've just gone blue through the first segment.
Whoa.
So we've got to go to break now.
Okay.
We'll be back in 2 minutes. Don't go away, everyone, because we're just getting started here.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm here with my guest, John King, and Tamer Zaman. We are talking about 1 million acts of innovation and whether your company should be creating or consuming and what it takes to make it come more alive. Now, Tamer, we've had the examples and your thesis. What can our listeners take from this to make their companies more alive in their day-to-day operations, when they're working with their teams, planning their strategies? What are some real pointers that you would give to the companies that you're consulting with?
That's a great question. So the first thing I think, yeah, as a company you may want to look at is, what are you committed to? I find that a lot of businesses are so busy just trying to do their day-to-day jobs, just trying to make payroll meet, let out. And to really look at where, if you brought innovation into your business, it could make a big difference. You know, if you're a payments company, it could be, I don't know, how you manage people. It could be in your marketing. It could be just really looking at which parts of your business, if you brought innovation, it would be inspiring not only to you but to the rest of your business, your colleagues, your employees. I think that's a good place to start from.
Okay, John, you talk about cultural change. How do you inspire a corporate culture of creativity?
Well, first of all, you get people's needs and concerns handled. Creativity, it falls into the realm of art, and art does not flourish unless we've actually got our basic, food and shelter and things handled, and then we have the time and the space to be able to think creatively about things. So creativity and art kind of like points to that. Well, in my culture, in my business, are people actually fulfilled, happy, being challenged? Generally, it falls along two tracks. According to the great Hungarian psychologist Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, who wrote Flow, he said that it's a function of challenge and skill. So that means, if you're HR, it's going to be, are we training our people to the level where they can do things and they are overtrained and don't have enough challenge, in which case they're bored? Or can we actually raise the challenge on them and have them trained so that they go into flow? Because if they're not, they're in anxiety. So what we try to do is we try and take a look at how can we build a flow culture? And in building that flow culture, we find that creativity comes in because the challenge and the skill levels are at such a level that people actually are now looking and seeking out new opportunities to think and play.
Reminds me of a project I did a few years ago. We were looking at how you create a milieu for your top researchers and innovators.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at companies who had been most successful in terms of the number of patents that they had created.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that we found in terms of their best practices, that they ended up having two different kinds of employees. Well, first of all, work life was very important because the people spent so much time at work that the life around had to be made as valuable and meaningful in as short a time as possible.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is they found that you could kill a really creative person by doing the wrong kind of career pathing. And that companies that only had one career path, sending them up the management chain, at some point they sort of killed off about 50% of their best minds because they were minds that really wanted to stay in the research, in the creating, in the experimenting on that side. Yet, if they couldn't advance, if they couldn't be promoted, what happened if they dead-ended? So really best companies actually developed dual career paths where you could actually go up an advancement ladder as management, or you could go up a ladder as the creator. Mm-hmm. And I watched them afterwards, and you really saw that that played out for company. They kept their best creators longer, and they produced more new products. So I think that's a really interesting. The other thing that I've seen that's been really interesting for companies, but I wonder how you generalize it, are companies like 3M that had MoleWorks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could be a rogue inventor.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they came up with the Post-its.
That's right. That's right. And prior to that, back when I was a kid, that recording tape.
Absolutely. And then you saw companies where they had their rogue inventors or groups and didn't know how to use their inventions and lost literally billions of dollars. And one of the ones I'm thinking of is Xerox that couldn't deal with any innovation that wasn't related to copying, but was great for creating a lot of other companies.
Exactly.
Like Apple. And at one point I knew the litany of inventions that Xerox PARC had come up with.
Yeah.
That went on to enrich a lot of other people, but not the Xerox shareholder. Anyway.
Well, just on that point, you could take the point of view that Xerox actually invented all those other companies just by their leadership training school. It was amazing.
It was amazing. They were also a fascinating company on the international sphere, but that is another show.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on now, and let's look at the Million Acts of Innovation. And you've got this huge international network of passionate innovators. What are they interested in right now? What should our listeners know that, you know, the world's most passionate innovators are looking at?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's not something that you would think was right at hand, but if you think into it, it will go clunk for you. It'll go, oh, wow, yeah, sure, of course. What I found out is that we are in a point in time when we are past the rape and pillage kind of school of doing business, and we are into the high social consciousness, we want to be good citizens. And this is happening all over the world. And so you find when you go into a company and the company needs to be lit up, one of the things that you do is you start forming ad hoc little teams of, say, 3 and 4 and 6 people and have them take on inventing for themselves projects that they can do in their communities that are not going to drain the assets or the resources of the company that they're working for, but actually are going to create goodwill and light up the people that are going back, contributing to the people that they love the most, which are the people in their communities, in their churches, in their schools, you know, in their universities, and places like that.
You know, that's really interesting. A couple of weeks ago, we had Darcy Goodwin on. She was the communications manager for Federal Express in China.
Mm-hmm.
She was involved in setting up their corporate social responsibility programs.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that was one of the chief attractions for young, well-trained Chinese, was the ability to do that very much, to engage their own communities as well as their own careers.
Well, you know, I can tell you, Darcy's absolutely right about that. If, see, the power and the juice right now, I firmly believe that the power in the juice is in the kind of the 25 to about 37 or 38 year old demographic of people who are in organizations. People who aren't quite there as the quote leaders with the or top on managers, but people who have the energy and yet they're still learning, and they are starting their families, and they are engaging, and they're becoming successful in their communities, and they want to contribute. And I think that's our target demographic. And guess what? In today's day and age, those are people who form tribes. So they just naturally do things together.
Now, aside from survivor, could you define tribe for me, please?
Tribe is people. There's two ways that people get organized into tribes in organizations. One of them is they get organized around their language. We have taken and said, well, okay, there's stage 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, of which stage 2, 3, and 4 are the relevant one are the relevant stages. But at stage 2, people are actually organized kind of around being in a zero-sum game that they're losing. They're feeling like a loser. They're feeling separated, and they have a kind of a generalized comment about life that life, my life sucks. And they're actually in an organization where they're being exploited by people who are at the next higher level. And the next higher level are people who have the point of view that I'm great, you're not, and I have the stats to prove it. And they use that to dominate. And then they're being managed by an aware group of people who are failing about as fast as they can, who are going, no, we're great. And who's interacting with I'm great, and I'm great is going, yeah, well, we're great because I'm great.
They take all the money.
Exactly. Exactly. So so in language is one of the places where tribes form. People tribe literally form around those three ways of talking themselves. Another one is they form around structure. You can actually take a look and see how they're structured. Are they connected to other people? If not, no access to power whatsoever. Predictable stage 2. Predictable, my life sucks. Are they connected in a hub and spoke sort of situation? And if so, are they at the hub of that? Are they kind of running things? Do they have a little? Are they building a little kind of fiefdom for themselves? If so, stage 3, I'm great, you're not. Predictable, dominating other people. Or are they forming networks? Are they forming?
Now that you speak, spoken about network, I want to ask Tamer, because you've got a great segue to my next question.
Great.
Tamer, you are overseeing a really terrific network, and it's the LinkedIn networking group, also 1 Million Acts of Innovation.
Right.
What are your people looking at? What are they seeing as game changers?
I think that they're looking at it, they think as game changers, is anything that's around three concepts that John King helped put together around the aha and wow. What I mean by that is concepts that are inspiring, concepts that moves something forward that's important to them, right? Some people, what's important to them is how do we end terrorism, as an example. Some
so
people could be the rising cost of healthcare.
Is that a hunk concept? We're 2 minutes to break, so what I want you to do is, in one sentence each, define duh with one example, define uh-huh, and define wow, each one with like a one-sentence description.
I'll go over duh. John, why don't you talk about aha, and we'll talk about a wow.
Okay.
Duh would be, in North America, we're one of the largest adopters of social media per capita in the world as consumers, but our businesses are not. A lot of small, medium-sized businesses don't have the time, resources, or the knowledge in how to use social media to grow their business.
Now,
so
I've got a quick question about duh before you go on. One sec. Is it the or is it duh?
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
There it is.
This is duh came out of an interaction I had with my 9-year-old granddaughter.
Okay.
And I told her something that was just really, really blissfully obvious for her, and she went, Papa John, duh.
That. We got to go to break. When we get back, you're going to define uh-huh and wow for me. Wow is probably a little self-explanatory. But let's go to break now, and then after you do that briefly.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back, everyone, to the third segment of Global Reach. I am here with two amazing innovators, John King and Tamar Zaman. And we are talking, among other things, about how important an inflection can be as we're looking at three concepts. Which I have been informed is not like when you're really not listening to somebody but you want them to think they are, but when it's when the light bulb goes on. And wow. And we've got a caller on hold. Christy, if you just stay on hold for 2 more minutes. John, what is
Well, it really is,
you
know, what you said. Yeah, I think that, you know, when I take a look and I work with people, I like to keep things simple. And so I say I only do three things. I do aha, duh, and wow. Unless they all come together in the same moment, and that's Shazam, of course. But aha is exactly that. You see something and you've been looking at it and you haven't seen, and suddenly, where's Waldo? It gets real clear to you and you go, aha! And now you see your pathway through.
Oh, I had a moment like that several decades ago when I was looking at all kinds of currency stuff and suddenly I went, Nixon's gonna decouple from gold.
Yes.
And by God, 72 hours later, he did.
And look,
everything kind of went whirr. Aha.
It was a major, the entire economic, I was there. The economic world just went, aha, we have an opportunity here.
And my family, who was in Europe, I had bought a lot of currency for them right before we devalued. Okay, quickly, wow. Self-explanatory?
Wow. I would say that's when you see, wow is more like solutions. You know, aha is more like openings, but wow is like, oh, wow, I see the whole solution, or wow, wasn't that awesome, or something seen in completion.
So, duh is, hey, dumbass, it should be self-evident.
Thank you very much.
Is aha. And wow is, we got it,
we solved it.
Okay. Meantime, so those are great kind of framework concepts. What are some of the specifics, the way that they apply, that are really intriguing your network of innovators?
Well, we take a look at, you know, what we have is in terms of our resources when we're looking at it strategically a couple of years ago. And we were kind of like banging our head against, well, let's try it this way, and let's go over to business, and let's try it with that. And every time we would open up the idea to business, business just wanted to buy us and then have Million Acts of Innovation be something that they could kind of stick next to their logo, and they owned it. And we weren't interested in that. This is something that's an idea for all people. This is really an idea that I know that this is going to be successful when some fourth grader in Edmonton, Canada, tells his mom, "Mom, this is what I'm going to do that's innovative today." You know, when we know that it's trickled down and it's gotten into the school system and so on. So what we saw was, wow, what if we connected bright young minds, postgraduate students, and had them be interns in companies doing social media for companies, because companies don't get social media at all, as Timur just said, and it became, duh. And now we put the thing in, and it's also been aha in terms of discoveries. Case in point, young Chinese guy working with one of the builders in Toronto who wants to sell condos, and they want to sell condos to Chinese, but duh, they're not advertising or posted on any of the Chinese networks. They're out there on Google and stuff like that, but the Chinese aren't going to that. Let's go there. And the aha and the wow became when that young Chinese guy who knows nothing about marketing said, "Hey, you're not selling to my people." You know, and literally the CIO, who was the guy who was in charge of that whole thing, I mean, slapped his forehead and went, "Oh, my God." You know?
I guess the first person who discovered they could sell over home TV network did the same thing. And now, by the way, there are 47 networks in China.
Exactly. Exactly. Those folks are, you know, all you got to do is learn how to speak the people's language and get the message to them in a way that they can accept it. And we've learned this, and we're real good at it if you're in English.
Now, Tamar, now we're talking to really what 1 million acts of innovation can produce. But Tamar, you said kind of Canada's doing the same thing. You're parachuting social media savvy students into small and medium-sized Canadian businesses. How's that working out?
It's actually really interesting because we've actually started to experiment doing that with American companies as well, just to see if this can work across the border thing, where we can take smart social media students and parachute them into these businesses. Three things we're funding. First of all, the funder, the person paying for all of this, is the government. And what we're telling the government to consider is this model will create new jobs, businesses, as a result of getting in-demand smart students that we've pre-screened, helping them grow their business, will grow. They will, and I don't know if you've ever worked with a bunch of smart, talented students. One of the things you will notice is the amount of fresh thinking that they have, they bring to the table. This is a group that we haven't beaten the creativity out of them yet. So businesses get lots of really great ideas, fresh thinking, and then that energy that comes in. These students are not there to paint the wall or do something like that. They're working on a specific business challenge that always drives into sales and productivity, so the businesses get a lot of value for it. One of the challenges that I think a lot of our education system has is how do you keep up, how do you deliver education in a world, in a business world that's changing?
So by Timur, I'm going to interrupt you right now.
Yeah.
Take a breath. I'll bet that Tay has some questions right here.
Well, how do you, I mean, education's been one of the big things we've been looking at on this show. All the way from pre-K to post-secondary, and the fact that a lot of education systems, including in the U.S., we are failing to educate enough students and failing to get them going. We don't have enough in college, and we don't have programs that are alive enough, and we don't know whether really the online programs can engage students the way they really need to be engaged. Comment?
Oh, well, I'd love to jump in here because this is my little hot button. You know, we've got upwards of 50% of kids are dropping out in certain areas of cities and so on like that because they're smart and they see that the education that is being presented to them is not going to be useful for them in the future they're living into, not relevant at all. I have three grandchildren. All three of them were homeschooled. They were partially schooled, but they were homeschooled. One of them happens to be a 15-year-old girl who's at the San Francisco Ballet, and so in order for her to do what her future is about, which is to become a ballerina, She has to do online stuff, and she finds that in 1 hour a day she can get what she what she's not getting in 8 hours a day of sitting in a classroom.
Then I think the classrooms don't do it right, because I always loved being able to really engage.
Uh-huh.
I loved it when I was at university, mm-hmm. and I loved it when I was mm-hmm. teaching, when I could really get students to talk and to come up with ideas. And we've got 4 minutes to break.
Well, you know, I mean, education, education, education. We are, in the U.S., we are here dealing with a failed system. Part of the reason why we use the testbed of Canadian, the Canadian system to actually launch Million Acts was because that's a pretty solid, high, you know, it's rated fifth in the world as a great place to live, and the educational system is really excellent, and there's all of this stuff going on. The only thing that's missing is the awareness of the people that they are as great and as innovative as they actually are. So we're committed to that, you know, raising that level of awareness. Million Acts of Innovation is an awareness-raising kind of consciousness-raising organization where people come together and figure out who they are and what they're up to and what they'd like to bring into being for the, you know, for the future. And I want to migrate it to the U.S. This is where I live, and I particularly want to migrate it in the areas of energy and education and the big questions. You know, we're just not engaging with that. It's kind of like we're leaving it, kicking the can down the road, as they say. And if we don't do something, we're going to lose another generation of children. And those are our leaders.
Frankly, I personally think the way to engage students and really keep them learning is to let them solve problems.
Thank you.
I always wanted to save
That's
the world.
Right.
So, but then I'm of the JFK generation.
Yeah, well, you and me both. You and me both.
And it's stuck. So, I'm really intrigued by this parachuting social media savvy students into small and medium-sized businesses. Just real quick, and I don't want to beat it to death, but do you have any, how have those businesses which have had the interns done, like, relative to before they got the students or relative to other, you know, peer companies? Taymor?
What I'm finding is that because we train them, give them advanced social media skill sets and empower them into businesses, we're finding there, not all of them, but quite a few of them are leaving with $90,000 to $100,000 job offers when they're done with the program, versus students who don't go into a program to begin with.
Okay, that's good for the students. How did the businesses fare? Businesses where they interned.
There's tons and tons of testimonials online from businesses coming in and talking about how they've got ideas that has changed their marketing plans, their business plans from these students. The millennium population, if you will, 97% of them are on social media. You know, so as a business, are you engaging the millennium? Are you talking to them? Are they engaging in conversations with you? And so when you get the youth to come, kind of come into your business and coach you in how to change your communication, your website, your business model to speak to them, you start to see avenues where you can get new customers and retain new customers.
So you know the next question I'm going to ask and that I'm sure every listener we have has. How do we get one of these students to help our businesses?
Oh, that's a great question to ask. You simply apply to, you can contact anybody in our team at Million Acts of Innovation and submit a 14-page application to that asks questions like, what's your business model and why should I care? As like, why should I care as an A as a customer? You know, what's your plan for growth? What are you committed to that at? And once you submit the application, it goes into an independent board. The board reviews of it. Remember, we're funded by government, so the board has to review of it. And then once that's done, we invite you to a local college or university that we're working with, and we do a case competition. So you stand up between other businesses, and you pitch your product, your business challenge to the group of students that we have pre-screened up. we train them in advanced social media skill sets and business. And we do something called speed dating. So businesses pitch to a student teams. The student teams are observing and seeing if this is something they want to do. The business or student team stand up and pitch back if you were going to be working with them, what they would be doing for you. And it's a simple speed dating process.
So it's sort of like an intern shark
tank. We take you.
Listen, Timur, we got to go to break now, but I do have another question, which is this seems to only be working in Canada. John, how do we get this into various cities around the U.S.? But we got to go to break. Don't go away.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Need to hold focus groups in 7 countries or interview doctors in 57? Global Reach can get it done. Trying to expand into new markets, Global Reach will help you assess the opportunities, scope out the competition, and understand the risks. We are a strategic business intelligence firm with a network spanning over 60 countries. We can support your clinical trial recruitment campaign or identify the best practices to use when global branding. Founder and former editor of Business International, Tay Revez, brings 30 years of experience in helping companies from financial service to high tech to healthcare. She was cited by Super Searchers as one of the top 12 primary researchers within the U.S. Tay excels at in-depth interviews, custom multi-country studies, and out-of-the-box challenges. She's also been a featured speaker on subjects as diverse as baby boomers and co-branded credit cards. Let us help you with your next project. We'll work closely with you to define your needs and determine actionable solutions. Please contact us at globalreach-sbi.com or call 212-877-8616.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are tuned in to Global Reach with Tay Revez. If you have a question or comment about our program, please call in to 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or you can send an email to trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to our final segment, everyone. This is going really fast. Listen, during the break, I got an email from David True, who's the president of NYPAY, which is the New York City Payment Innovation Network. Mm. He didn't have a question, but he just said, hi, Timur, or give my regards to Timur. So what did you two do together that he's saying hello to you?
We, as a part of Million Acts of Innovation, we started another venture called 1 Million Acts of Mobile Payments.
So the second payment innovation conference, wow.
Fascinating was we got emerging countries. These are countries like in Africa, Kenya, South America, India, coming in and coaching and mentoring mobile and payment executives in developed countries.
So is this building on the program that you did with Deborah Baxley of Capgemini, the 1 Million Acts of Payment Innovation?
That's the one. Okay. And so every one of these platforms that we go and build engages, you know, hundreds and thousands of people around the world, and so it's really great to hear back from him.
So when we went to break, I was wistfully saying we need some of these media-savvy student interns in the U.S. I did have one comment, which is if you're running a small business, it's hard to carve out a lot of time to do a 14-page request. But we're going to move on because, John, before the show, you were telling me about some fascinating stuff that's happening with innovative 30-somethings in Georgia, and I don't mean the state, I mean the republic over in Eastern Europe. And these are 30-something bankers who are planning to, first of all, take over the country's banking system, but also they've decided to do the impossible and are rebuilding Tbilisi?
They are. They're rebuilding the country. It's an amazing, amazing social project and economic project that's going on in Georgia in the face of constant threats and every once in a while the Russians roll in with their tanks and stuff like that. So they've had six wars in the last 30 years. And when the Soviets left, they just left it in a, they left it in a state of such disrepair that when people walk around and point out a building to you that's particularly ugly, they will say, yes, another jewel of Russian architecture. So, you know, they're very, very cynical about that. And the Georgian people are people who size you up almost immediately, and they either take you to their heart or you might as well not turn your back because, you know, they'll kill you. But they're amazingly passionate people, and I ran into, somehow got into a niche of people who were 27 to about 38, 39 years old, and in this ancient country that has its own language, when the banking system collapsed, it was a cash economy, and if you had the equivalent of about $500, you were a bank. So there were 14,000 banks all of a sudden. It has winnowed itself down to 14, and there are two that are like major banks. They are Wells Fargo. You know, they are B of A, but they're the Georgian National Bank.
Huh.
And you go into them, and you could be in New York City. Frankly, you could be in New York City walking into a bank. They've got this little bustling sort of thing going on, and they've got private capital, and they've got all of these products that they've developed. And they're a bunch of people who are 31 years old is the average age, and they're directors of the bank. And they're running all of this stuff. They've all got doctorates in economics and MBAs and stuff like that, bright as can be, speak several languages, and they know that they are rebuilding their country, and they are lit up.
Hmm. So you said that they're rebuilding Tbilisi. Where are they getting the funding?
Well, there are World Bank kind of, you know, stuff like that. The infrastructure is coming. It's slowly but surely, but they're building an economy there. So most of Tbilisi, for example, which is the capital city, is pretty run down. The streets are pretty beat up and old houses that, you know, in disrepair and stuff like that, most of it. But downtown, starting from the center out, they took on a project and they built a whole kind of, if you were in the States or if you were in Dubai, you'd say, that's a shopping mall, you know, and it's a multi-purpose shopping mall where they've got theaters and they've got where their ballet is lodged and where their opera is lodged and where their national theater is lodged. And then stores where you see Nike and you see all of those kind of things, but you're also seeing things like Brioni and Gucci and it's beautifully built out, and if you walk down the street and you hadn't seen the rest of Tbilisi, it's a kind of a mini Champs-Élysées.
How did they get it funded, which is always interesting? One of the reasons I'm interested is that one of my recent guests, Rob Duger, was talking about how you get private sector funding for social infrastructure. So
yeah.
I'm curious what's going on in Georgia in this respect.
Well, I don't know because I haven't been into it enough, and I'm going to find that stuff out. But they're very skilled. All of these young docs in economics, in MBAs, are very skilled at being able to manage debt, and so they have found a way to leverage themselves. And my suspicion is it's not with Russia; it's with us. With the West. They are looking to the West. I think they've got funding sources in England, United States, Canada, and World Bank. So I would say that sourcefully, that's probably what's happening. I would say the infrastructure stuff is World Bank stuff, and that the building of the retail and building of the commercial part of it out is probably coming more from Canada and England and U.S.
Very, very interesting. Fearlessness, it's great.
Fearless.
And
fearless.
Feelings of invulnerability.
Yeah.
Tamar, I've got a question for you. You were saying one of the things that companies can do that can turn out brilliantly is when they bring together groups that normally don't associate with each other. Business, tech. And by the way, we've only got 2 minutes to close, so you have to answer me in 1 minute or less.
Okay. For developed countries, the challenge we have is our workforce is aging, and so immigration becomes key. And, you know, figuring out how do you provide mentors from companies to help immigrants into your companies becomes, you know, something that I think is important for developed countries like Canada, Germany, Australia, parts of the U.S. and so on. We find that immigrants, when they come to companies that have a lot more immigrants, produce a lot more patents and a lot more innovative thinking.
Okay. Now, we've got, in the last minute or so, one sentence each. John, what's the one most important takeaway for our listeners, something they can do for their business tomorrow?
Oh, my God. This is a call on me, call on me. And I've got three. I'm sorry, but I've got three. They're
very
quick.
But you've got to leave room for Tamor and for me to tell him what's coming up next week.
I will. It's very simple. It's join, notice, and share. Join A Million Acts of Innovation. Notice where it is that you are consuming rather than creating, and just notice that. And start sharing where it is that you're creating in life.
And you'll find one million acts of innovation on LinkedIn. Tamor, most important takeaway.
Join A Million Acts of Innovation on LinkedIn on our website. Get engaged in a community of people that are creating versus consuming.
Wow. Okay. I thought this was exciting and very involving. I hope you all out there did too. In the next few weeks, we've got a number of interesting shows coming up. We're going to have Paul Christopher come back. He's one of the chief economists for Wells Fargo Advisor, and he's right now, as we speak, he is in Beijing, Taipei, and Seoul. I'm not sure which of them, but he's doing that tour. He'll be back to tell us what he's found there. We're going to talk with two companies involved in new eco-friendly energy technologies, one helping to clean up coal, believe it, and the other converting waste to gas. I think that's going to be a fascinating show or two shows. We've got Columbia launching an energy policy center. I'm trying to get some of their speakers on the show. And we've also got coming up a really fascinating two authors who are writing a rather groundbreaking book on China. So, and pretty soon we're going to have this show on IPSA World, which is India, Brazil, and South Africa. And I think these are all going to be really interesting shows, so keep tuning in to Global Reach. Please send me your ideas for shows, and you can find me at trr@globalreach-sbi.com. Thank you so much for listening, and use the next week to extend your global reach.
Thank you for listening to Global Reach with Tay Revez. Please join us again next Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a great week.